The following is this week's recording of our live streams, which take place on Discord. We call these meetings kinship because we realize that the deepest mutuality is not one of biography or biology, but one of ideas. And this is a time for us to discuss the most edifying ideas that come to mind. You can join the Discord community to meet and interact with like-minded people via the link in the description. I hope you will enjoy the following discussions.
So before I start again, I just want to thank you, because this is such an amazing Discord channel, and it's so inspiring just hearing everyone's opinions, whether it's in the kinship meetings or just in the general text or the new transmission, whatever. It's just so amazing that we're all here, and I'm really excited that we're all here together and that we get to share opinions and reflect. So thank you first for that. And in terms of question of the week, I recall it was about judgments. Is that correct?
So let's remind everyone what the question of the week was, just in case they don't know or they forgot. So the question of the week was, pick a particular judgment and follow it all the way home. So whenever you observe yourself judging someone or something, and chase it back. And where does it go back to? That's the question. What particular idea, what particular belief do you observe, just observe, that judgment going back to? So yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, yeah. And also, this is my second time speaking, and yeah, so this is great.
Yeah.
But so in terms of judgment, I was just kind of pondering on that subject, and what came to me was jealousy, because I found that in the past, when I felt jealous towards somebody, I would then judge them, and my mind would create reasons to why I should not like them or why I deserve to have what they have. But now, thinking back, I'm realizing that maybe when we judge somebody or it's something related to jealousy, it's almost an indicator that tells us maybe this is something that we think that we lack, which is why we get jealous and upset that others have it. So do you think that jealousy in specific, or when we judge with jealousy, do you think that that stems as an indicator that we are thinking in a subconscious way, or we think that we're lacking something that we have?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for being here. Thank you for everything you said, and thank you for sharing this and your honesty and your openness to everything. And yes, I think even the question itself, even though you asked it as a question, it contains a lot of insight already as it is. And that's the thing with judgment. It can have literally as many reasons as there are people, right? And of course, jealousy engenders judgment, of course, and we tell ourselves all those stories and whatever. But what that jealousy and that judgment really points to, and that's why the question of the week is follow it home, where does it go to? It does in fact go back to a lack, but not the lack we're thinking of. It's not whatever we judge someone for, whatever we're jealous about, envious about that another person has, it's not that we lack. It's the very judgment and the very idea that we do lack something. That is our lack. And as long as we judge people, we can be 100% certain that we have that lack. Again, that particular lack, which is the idea that we lack something, not that we actually lack something. Because, and when it comes to jealousy, maybe speaking about jealousy specifically, jealousy, in my experience, is immediately extinguished when you realize that everything has its price. Every single thing has its price. So many times we're jealous about things and jealous and envy people because they have something that they don't deserve. and that we deserve. Of course, all of these are illusions. That they don't deserve it is an illusion, that we deserve it and don't have it is an illusion. Because all we see is what that person has, at least how it appears to us, right? They might not even actually have the things we think they have. But we don't see the price that they paid to have that. Nothing is free. Nothing is free. And that's not even bad news. It shouldn't be free, because so many things, especially when we think about philosophy, especially when we think about knowing thyself, as the ancient Greeks say, the work itself is the very process of the reward. Meaning the work itself is the reward itself. There's no such thing as doing the work and it's terrible and it's not satisfying and it's not fulfilling only for some desired end, for some perceived reward. No, the work itself is the very thing which allows you to know thyself as you go. And so when we see someone, and this speaks a lot about where we're at, we don't even envy people who know themselves. We envy people when we do envy them for their possessions, for their so-called status, for their so-called whatever kind of things that don't really have any value intrinsically. We never value people. Oh, this is a person that knows themselves. They're at peace. All we see is, if we did envy someone like that, like I said, all we would see is their peace. All we would see how comfortable they are in the sense that they have clarity about their own world view. They don't have any conflicts. They don't have any contradictions. Not any, but to a certain threshold, they are contradiction-free almost. And we don't see the work that went into it. And even if we did see it, we're unwilling to do the work. Because if we were willing, we would be doing it. And if we would be doing it, we wouldn't be looking at others. Not only could we already be at a place where we don't judge others anymore and we don't feel that jealousy, but we wouldn't even be looking at others in the first place, especially not with that kind of eye. We would just be focused on doing the work, which is exactly what already is the work itself, to look at your own plate, to do what's in front of you, to focus on your own self. That already is so much, if not all of the work, or at least something that all of the work requires in all its stages. And so when do we have time to even look at others, let alone feel jealousy or envy for them, let alone stay up at night worrying about that and being consumed by it? Because there's no room for it. But it is an amazing realization and a very necessary realization that instead of just feeling the envy, instead of just feeling the jealousy, as the question of the week suggests, that we go back and see where does this come from. And we end up seeing exactly where jealousy comes from, all the things that I've just said and more, I'm sure. And so how beautiful is it that we can get to a point by doing that, that we can be thankful even to something as envy? Because, wow, thank you so much, my jealousy, my envy. Without you, I would have not seen that I'm in conflict, that I'm in contradiction. Without you, I would not have realized that nothing is for free and that I always see the end results but never the work. And I would not have seen that if I did the work, that I would have it too. And I would not have seen that I just need to focus on myself, as those people did, whom I perhaps envy. And also to see that, first of all, the things that I envy in the first place are unimportant things that I shouldn't envy in the first place. All of these things we can infer, deduct, and receive from the very thing that gives us agony, our jealousy, our envy, our judgment. And that's why the question of the week has been, follow your judgment home, see where it goes, because no matter what the reason is that you judge, it will be the very reason why you will let go of that reason. If you follow your judgment home, whatever it has been that you've been judging someone or something, it will be the very material and tools that will enable you to let go of that false belief, which that judgment came out of. If that's jealousy, here you go. This is how we then have the privilege of taking care of our own jealousy and to never have it again. If it's a belief like last week at the end I mentioned, if it's because we are so virtuous because we're philosophers, right? Or we're Christians, we're Muslims, we're Buddhists, whatever it may be, and we're so virtuous, right? Because we have all the answers and the others don't, and we pity them and we judge them as lesser, as worthless. Those virtues become the very reason why we cannot have virtue, because it is not virtuous to pity someone. It is not virtuous to judge someone. It is not virtuous to think of someone as lesser and to think of yourself as better or more. And so the very reasons that are supposed to free us from vice become the things that push us into vice. And so again, if our judgment was based on our philosophy, based on our religion, then we can see then that we need to let go of that philosophy, of that religion, to the degree that it makes us judge other people. Because nowhere in religion, nowhere in philosophy does it say judge other people. Nowhere does it say think of them as lesser. It only says things like be fair, don't steal. So if you don't steal, but you judge someone else for stealing, then the very reason why you don't steal becomes an impediment towards virtue for you. And there's no bigger contradiction than that in philosophy, in religion, in moral values, in ethical values. And so that would be that particular reason taken care of. Judgment, our own judgments can teach us so much. They can teach us everything. Because once we stop judging, we have learned everything. Because everything that we're contradicted about, everything that we have a false idea about, a false belief about, will inevitably lead us to judging. And so when judgment stops, that means false beliefs have stopped, at least to the degree where they impact our daily lives, the fundamentals of everything. And so if you are judging due to jealousy, that takes care of jealousy. If you truly follow it back and you deal with it and you don't run away from it or you don't ignore it. In other words, if you do the work of life and you don't listen to fear. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah, and speaking of fear, just want to add a small comment on that. I feel like fear is seen as such a negative thing. I mean, I used to personally perceive fear as something bad, and it would stop me from doing certain things or achieving goals. But now I see that fear is actually the thing that drives us and drives our body to do new things and to do scary things. Because when we feel fear, it's our body is sending us warning signs. Oh no, what if this happens, right? Like, what if that happens? But also in a way, fear is showing us that there's something new and exciting about to happen and that the body doesn't know how to handle that. So we get into scarcity mode and we get nervous, start shaking, right? Like, let's say it's for a presentation to do in front of the whole class. But also in a way, fear is showing us that we are in the present moment and that we're alive because we're physically seeing symptoms of fear, we're shaking, we're sweating, but also that's showing us how much power the mind has. That if the mind feels so much fear, we physically see that. So if we then take that information and put it into where is this fear coming from, maybe it's excitement. That just reminded me of what you said, because yeah, in a way, every problem or negative thoughts that we have they are what can lead us to coming out of those thoughts. So I think it's really beautiful and really well said what you just said. So thank you for that. And if I may ask you, what do you do in specific situations where you feel that your mind is trying to take over with these perspectives of lack, which are not real, of course, but you know, the mind tends to think it's real, or when you are trying to come out of a place of judgment? I'm just curious if you would like to share what you personally do to get out of those.
Yeah, thank you for everything you said, and thank you for your question as well. It changes, right? There are different ways, but it's generally about intention. It's generally about attitude. And the best tool we have for not letting fear take over or judgment take over or any of the vices, right? Any of the emotions, which we saw in one of the videos, right? All the emotions are tied to all of the vices. Without anger, without resentment, without fear, without hate, without strife, without envy, we don't get into the vices. What's amazing. We don't get into the vices when we don't get into emotion. And again, for all those people who immediately want to defend emotion, I am not saying we should deny the emotions. I'm not saying we should suppress the emotions. What I am saying is we should not be led by emotion. We should not be dominated by emotion. Emotion is there for a reason, and we far exceed that reason. When we worry, when we stay up at night, when we're fearful our entire lives, essentially, and when we're constantly, on a daily basis, get angry with people, we are far, far exceeding the usefulness of the emotions. We are not our emotions, so the emotions cannot be destroyed anyway. There's no person who doesn't feel any emotion at any point to any degree. The coming on of emotion is completely out of your control. And in fact, serves a purpose. That's the very purpose they serve. It's you don't have to think about it. You don't have to do anything. As you yourself pointed out about fear partially. Like fear is an indicator of something. Fear makes you think of something. Fear puts you in a certain mode of being that can be useful. But it's a very momentary thing. The very moment it comes up is the only moment, if at all, it is useful. So, to answer your question is, don't go with the next step. When fear comes up, take all those things that you deduce from it, right? It means we're in the moment. It means something's happening. It means we're not used to something, and it's an indicator for certain things, and it can make you aware of certain things. But don't go with the next step. Don't go with any kind of what if sort of thinking, right? The first thought comes up, the first moment of fear comes and says, you're about to speak in front of a great number of people. And what if you mispronounce something? What if you forget what to say? What if you lose your notes? What if you get told to print? Don't go with those thoughts. That's exactly what you can do. The emotion has served its purpose. If there was even a purpose at all, right? But the uncontrollable part is over, is what I'm saying. Now you want to come back to reason. You want to come back to awareness. You don't want to be led by fear throughout your entire speech or your presentation, whatever you're doing in front of that crowd, right? You don't want to be led by fear or by any other emotion. You want to be led by clear, calm reason. And that will give you the best result. And so the uncontrollable part is over, right? Fear has come in. Now it's up to you. Are you going to adopt it? Are you going to hold its hand? Are you going to keep talking to it? Are you going to keep walking with it? Are you going to keep asking it what to do next? Or are you going to say, okay, that's enough? And bring your mind back to all those aware, rational, reasonable ideas that you know for a fact, that you have already established in your mind through your reading, through your writing, through your talking to other people, like here in kinship, you've already solidified them. You know why to believe them. You know the outcome of their absence. You know the outcome of their presence, and you choose their presence. And so it's all about awareness always. You can be aware of fear, and then that's the only way to also be aware when reason has stopped being useful or when it has stopped being uncontrollable, and then to take back over, to come back to reason and to reality. And so that's what I do, and that's what I recommend everyone else doing. And it's not at all that I'm perfect at this. I say that every now and then. I think I should say it more, because sometimes it seems like people tend to think when they see someone speaking in a video or doing anything and giving any kind of suggestions on how to deal with certain situations, that it looks like they have it all figured out. It's not like I have it all figured out at all. But I do know what works and what doesn't. And what works is, to the extent that I can do it, I can see it, that to be aware is the key to everything. That you are in fear doesn't mean that you can't be aware. And awareness is something in your control, to stick to it as close as you can, which is almost entirely in your hand, is something you can always do in any situation. Just be aware, what's happening, what's going on. And that's something that needs to be practiced, of course. There's no impressive quote that I can give you that you can just repeat to yourself and be like, oh, okay. No, you have to practice it every day. And that's why we say philosophy as a way of life. And if you're religious, religion as a way of life. Whatever it is that shows you truth, whatever it is that strips you of illusions, and whatever it is that has shown you in the first place that fear is just an illusion, is the very thing that you need to practice and implement in your daily life, and keep seeing that fear is an illusion. To understand it once is not enough. You need to keep seeing, keep practicing, keep being aware every single time I'm afraid it's an illusion. And I see it every single time. And I've seen it so many times, fear could not scare me anymore. And that's also what I want to tell you about when you were talking about fear. I agree with all of that. But I do think that should not be a constant condition. It should not be constant that you perceive fear and that you live in fear, but you see it as natural and necessary. And all those lessons you draw from it are correct, but those lessons are supposed to get you over fear and not to make peace with fear. Do not make peace with fear. Fear is not on your side. And fear is not at all necessary to any degree that we use it at or that we experience it at. I want to make you aware of that. Don't ever think that fear is something necessary to you, that you cannot live without it, that you could not make the proper decisions without it, that you could not prepare properly without it, that it makes you think of things that you would otherwise be negligent of and that you wouldn't think of. No, it's not true. You can use fear, and the very way that you experience fear, and especially the reasons you experience fear, just like the question of the week suggests, like follow home the reason why you experience fear and learn from it and see its true nature. Yes, use it exactly the way that you said, but that's only a temporary condition to get rid of fear altogether. And I promise you, it is possible. Again, I'm in no way perfect. I'm in no way even close to getting rid of fear, but I do see that every single time I'm afraid, it points at something. And when I follow it home, I see that it's an illusion. And I don't listen to fear, and I go with the opposite of whatever it's saying. Either I don't listen to it at all, or I go with the opposite. And every single time, once I do that, I can look back and see, and clearly see that it was an illusion. As real as it seemed then, as much of an illusion, I see that it is now. And so everything you said about fear, like I said, I agree. I think it's very important, very necessary, and very productive the way that you think about it. But it's only to get you over fear altogether. do not make peace with fear. Don't let it settle in into your life like it already has. We want to unsettle it, literally. And we want to throw it out. Okay?
Yes. Thank you. That's very, it makes things a lot more clear now. So yeah, that was the end of all my questions. So thank you for answering my questions. And it was very good to hear. So I've kind of got a new perspective now. So thank you, Atesh.
I appreciate it. Thank you for being here. And thank you for speaking here for the second time. And we look forward to hearing from you more if you want to, like we always say. No expectations, no obligations, of course, only if you want to. And I feel like you wanted to this time. So, and that's also why it was so great. So I'll move you back to the audience. And I thank you very much once again. Those were very interesting, very important questions. As always, I'm very amazed how relevant these questions are to all of us, even though they feel so personal, right? This is the most personal things we don't tell anyone about. Or so few people, rather, right? Only people that we trust, only people that we value. Yet they are at the same time the most impersonal things in terms of that they're universal and timeless. Everyone deals with them. Everyone has dealt with them. Everyone will have to deal with them in the future. And so thank you very much. And I will invite our next speaker.
Hi.
Hello.
Everyone.
Hi.
Hi. This is my first time. Attending. Nice. And speaking, and I'm really grateful to be here. So I joined the community just a few days ago, and I'm so thankful to you for making that possible. I'm happy to be part of this space and look forward to growing with all of you.
Excellent. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. So I'd like to engage directly with the question of the week.
Yes, the question of the week is observe yourself judging something or someone and then follow the judgment home. What particular belief or idea does it go back to?
So while reflecting on the question and listening to the last podcast, I realized that at the time of the experience, I didn't recognize my reaction as something worth examining. I felt resentment and anger after someone spoke negatively about my friend and questioned her participation in a spiritual practice because, according to them, she does not dress in a way they approve of. They also criticized my spiritual teacher for allowing her participation. I chose not to respond directly, sensing they were not open to my perspective. Instead, I discussed it with another friend and I noticed myself slipping into judgment and gossip, which only intensified my resentment. So I reflected upon it and I saw that this reaction was rooted in a belief about loyalty and respect. Because both people matter deeply to me and I felt compelled to defend them. However, I also saw the contradiction that was pointed out in the podcast. The belief that promised peace led me into anger and inner disturbance instead. I was reminded of the point that if I cannot love everyone, I cannot truly love anyone. So in reacting with resentment, I limited my own capacity for peace and love. So seeing this made it clear that loyalty, respect, and love do not need my anger to exist or be defended. Acting from resentment only moved me further away from peace those values were meant to bring. Even after I realized all of this, but I'm still a bit unsure whether I actually judged her, or was it a simple discussion? Because I feel like it was a discussion, but somewhere I feel like I might have slipped into gossip. I don't know, judged her. I don't know how to get to that. This is what I've understand so far, and I would like you to help me out.
Well, thank you for that insight. I mean, what you said is so much, and as is often the case, I find you already have the answer and you already have these beautiful insights. What you are just think you're lacking is the belief in them fully, but that will come with time. You just had these realizations that you didn't have before, right? Many of the things you just said, you literally did not have before this very, very recent experience. So it's an expectation that is unfounded, ungrounded by, and which comes probably from the ego, from the false self, from the not you, whatever you want to call it, right? That says you just had a new realization, but you don't understand it fully and you don't believe in it fully yet. And so you might as well let it go or what? I mean, it's just trying to put confusion into you. But there is no such requirement that says you have to, everything that you just understood, so to speak, or saw, that you have to have a full understanding of it immediately afterwards. Give yourself time. You just had a realization, multiple realizations that are so fundamental, so amazing, actually, that most people never even come to, let alone practice, let alone actually put into their lives and live according to. You've just stumbled according to a great, you just stumbled across an immense treasure, and you're worrying about the fact that you don't have full accounting of it yet. You haven't counted every dime and every piece of gold of that treasure yet. So what? You know, give yourself time. You just found this amazing treasure. Give yourself time to really count what is there and how much is there and all that and what its value is. But I also want to respond directly to what you said. Just as a friend talking to a friend, not as someone who's fixing a problem, right? Because there is no problem. This problem that you have in your mind is like of this so-called contradiction of having seen something but not fully believing it yet. There's no problem in that. There's nothing wrong with that. But let's talk about it, right? You said that you're not sure if you were actually judging, if it was really a judgment. Or if you were just having a discussion about it, but you also said that you had resentment, whether it was towards this person or no matter what, you felt resentment. And can someone who feels resentment have peace?
No.
Exactly.
Those are two contradictory
things. Yeah. And so we want to get rid of the source of resentment. And the source of resentment, as you perfectly saw, and which is a huge gift to you, by the way, is that it was due to judgment, but of course not to the judgment itself, but to the belief that that judgment comes from. And that belief that that judgment came from was what, you think?
Loyalty and respect.
Right, because you believe in loyalty and respect, which are on their own very good things, right? Of course, it's good to adhere to the idea, the concept, often the virtue of respect and loyalty. But now you saw that those exact things, virtue, the virtue of respect and loyalty, put you in a condition of resentment, within which you can have neither respect nor loyalty, right? Because a respectful person, a loyal person, has clarity. They know what they're doing, they know why they're doing it, and they're not doing it for some emotion, and they're not doing it to get some thrill out of anything, or they're not doing it in opposition to some evil. because anyone who does anything in opposition to evil has resentment. And so whenever you're defending loyalty, whenever you're defending respect towards an unloyal or disrespectful person, you are destroying those very that adherence towards those things within yourself. Of course, nothing happens to loyalty and respect itself. Respect has never asked you to fight for it, as you said. Respect and loyalty has never asked you to prove anything to anyone. It has never asked you to disprove and to make someone see that they're being disrespectful. You see what I mean? And so this needs to be dealt with, right? And the way to deal with it is to simply see the contradiction. You're a being of reason, as you know, right? Whenever you've seen a contradiction within yourself or in your actions and your behavior, you've dropped it. And so your so-called problem right now is you just don't know how exactly to drop it, or you see that there's a contradiction, but you just haven't nailed it down exactly how to solve that contradiction. But that will come with time, right? Don't let the confusion of this contradiction stand in the way of your eventual clarity of it. Because that, again, is the thing within you that wants to keep you resentful, wants to keep you afraid, confused, angry, whatever it may be. And it's doing that in this instant by again, raising that confusion. But give yourself time and see that the very thing which you do in order to procure peace for yourself is pushing you out of peace into, in this case, resentment. And so why do you think you need to have a conversation about this at all with that other person that you had? You said you talked to a friend about it afterwards. Why did you feel the need to do that even?
I think in that moment I was trying to prove a point that she is wrong for saying all these things.
And see what I mean? We just talked about that. I didn't even know that that's why you did that. But what did I say? Did loyalty and respect ever ask you to prove a point, right?
No. There's so much greater than all of this.
Yeah. So if they didn't ask you, right, you live your life according to, among other things, loyalty and respect, right? Because those are the virtues. Those are good things. They bring peace in your life. So if they didn't ask you to prove a point to someone or to prove anything to anyone, including to yourself, then why did you do it?
I was trying to prove it to myself. I think that I was trying to justify my resentment. I think. Because if my friend approves, yeah, that's bad to say something about someone, and I would get validation from her, and yeah, so it was right for me to get angry. I did not say anything to her, but yeah, I did not. I just stopped talking to her. That's it.
But see, that what made you stop is already the solution, right? You saw that you were doing these things for peace, but it wasn't giving you peace. And you said, wait a minute, why would I do it then? And you just stopped, right? So all you need to do is further become aware, just practice awareness, as you already know to do. And as these kind of situations repeat themselves, and as you see that your own actions are what causing your resentment, right? If resentment wasn't within you, it couldn't be provoked. And so that will also show you the way out of resentment. But I also want to suggest this to you. And this is a suggestion. It's a question. You can say whether that's true or not. Do you think you have been, maybe still are, identifying as a loyal person? And as a respectful person?
I think Now that I think about it, you made me think about it. I think my loyalty has nothing to do with someone else speaking ill about the people that I'm loyal to.
Right, but when you think about yourself, so to speak, do you think of yourself as a loyal person, as a respectful person? Like when you think about yourself, do you say, this is a respectful person?
I am not confident enough
meaning,
to say
meaning
that.
You're not sure if you think about yourself in that way or not?
Yes, I am not sure.
But you also don't think about yourself as a disrespectful person or an unloyal person, or do you?
No.
Right. So to me, that's good news that you don't really think about yourself that much, even to be sure if you think about yourself as a respectful person or not. But do consider this. When you were defending, when you were proving a point, and when you were looking for that validation from your friend that this situation was wrong and that you are seeing it rightly and that you two are on the right side of this whole conversation, was it maybe to prove to yourself that you are a respectful person? Because the way that we prove things to ourselves is by defending it, right? If we talk to a friend and we defend respect, we defend loyalty, and we are seen by others defending it, and then we are told that you are so right, you know, that was so disrespectful and you're seeing it correctly, you just defended that to me and I approve of that and I agree with you. That sort of gives us the sense of having proven to ourselves that we are respectful people when we fight disrespectful people, when we argue with them, or we try to show them their mistake. We often think that we thereby accomplish to prove to ourselves, to validate to ourselves, that we are not like them. We are respectful people. We are loyal people. Do you think that might have played a role in all that?
Yes, definitely.
So you see, again, even someone such as yourself who's clearly working on themselves has identities, right? Clearly you are identifying as a respectful person, as someone who values respect, as someone who treats others with respect, whatever your particular identity might be, that's within you, I'm not sure. But, and same with loyalty, right? I'm a loyal person. I don't abandon people. I stick with them and I'm trustworthy and I'm loyal. That's an identity. As I always say, right? Identity runs wide and deep. And one can identify, as you know, with anything. And one can have multiple identities. And the most important thing about identity is that they're relatively subconscious, unconscious. We don't see them. We're not aware of them most of the time. And that's how they can exist, because as soon as we shine the light of reason on it, on identities, and we say, hey, what do you do for me? Like, what's good about you? We see that the very thing that we identify with stands in the way of us truly becoming that. To identify as a respectful person pushes us into disrespect. Disrespect how? First of all, we're disrespecting ourselves by spending our time, effort, energy, attention, which are the most valuable things we possess, on proving to others and to ourselves that we are not like those terrible, disrespectful people, that we are respectful, that we are loyal. And we spend our time pointing that out, proving it to others and to ourselves, and most importantly, we feel good about it, right? And our feeling good about it depends on other people, because if they don't see that we are respectful people, we cannot prove that identity. We cannot say about ourselves, I'm a respectful person, if everyone thinks I'm disrespectful, even if they're wrong, even if they just don't have the facts right. If everyone says that we're disrespectful, we cannot relish in that identity of being a respectful person, of being an upholder of respectfulness. And so this is also what the question of the week is pointing out. Everything that you identify with, every false belief like that, every contradiction, every conflict, is the very thing that keeps you from having all those things that you know is right. Yes, respect is right. Of course, it's important to have respect. It's true. It's right and proper to have respect. But to judge others for being disrespectful is disrespectful. And so the very respect that we deserve, that we want to have for ourselves, that we want to be an adherent of, is taken away from us by us, by identifying with it, by thinking about it at all. Because like I said last time, if you truly give yourself over to loyalty and respect to those who deserve it, of course, then you will have no other option than be respectful in everything that you do. You won't even think about it. It won't even be an option to you to not be respectful, to not be loyal. How can you be disloyal to truth? If you love truth, right? Or if you truly love God, how can you be disloyal to God? How could you ever do anything that would be disloyal, disrespectful to truth, to God, to reality, to whatever you believe? You couldn't. It literally would not be an option for you. You would not think about it. It wouldn't happen. And even as an accident, it wouldn't happen. And so you never, ever have to think about being a respectful person. You never, ever have to think of yourself as a loyal person. And you certainly never, ever have to prove that to anyone, including to yourself. And every time you judge someone for not adhering to that which you adhere, how can you feel resentment? You need to remind yourself, how can you feel resentment towards someone who does not give themselves the very best thing? If someone is being disrespectful, that means they don't know what respect is. They don't know why to live a respectful life. And they themselves are in anger, in resentment, in frustration, in fear, in agony, in bitterness. And so they choose to not give the very best things to themselves. Fine. And they have a right to do that, by the way. Don't ever think that people don't have a right to do wrong things if it doesn't affect someone else, right? If they within themselves are disrespectful people, then they're doing that to themselves. No one is hurt by that. If someone disrespects you, they're not hurting you. You know exactly what's what. You know exactly that they're confused and that they don't know what they're talking about. And if they're right about what they're saying, that you've made a certain mistake, that's still not disrespect. And they're just right. They're just stating what, you know. Either way, there is no such thing as another person's disrespect being able to harm someone else. There's no such thing. But quite vice versa, everyone who is being disrespectful is in fact harming themselves because they don't have peace. As we said, we can't be resentful and have peace at the same time. We can't be angry and have peace. We can't be hateful and have peace. And so they don't have peace. They're doing that to themselves because of their very own disrespect that they're showing, or that they have within themselves, even if they're not showing it. So how can you judge someone like that? All right? They have the right to be wrong. Every wrong that they do, they suffer from themselves, and it doesn't impact anyone else. It certainly does not impact the concept, the idea of respect. Respect has never asked you to fight for it or to prove a point for it. So what's the harm done? Where's the problem? What requires you to judge that person for doing that? There is no reason. Now, when I say stuff like this, people confuse it with the physical realm. This is the idea of, this is the realm of truth, the realm of ideas, the realm of all that is non-physical and immaterial. On the lower level of our physical reality, our daily profane worldly lives, if someone is being so-called disrespectful and they're denying someone else certain resources or opportunities or anything that the other one is owed physically, materially, and you're in the position to go do something about it, of course, you go do something about it. You don't just say, oh, that person's just harming themselves and no one else is harmed. No, if, for example, money is involved and the person is not getting the money that they're owed, and that's the certain nature of that disrespect, and you are in a position, in fact, it is your duty to do something about it, go do something about it. But that's only the physical realm. That's not the highest realm that we're talking about. In the highest realm, there is no such thing as harming another. One can only harm myself, oneself. Only on the physical realm can someone damage another human being's property or another human being's body and these things. And that's what the laws and the justice system are for. But the idea, the concept, the very truth of justice itself is not harmed by anyone's actions and does not ask us to fight for it and does not ask us to do anything. The world profanely, the laws of our land, so to speak, do ask us to advocate for them and to uphold them with respect. And we can go do that without feeling a single thing about it. Neither anger nor pride. Right? We can uphold the laws of the land and do exactly what's proper and disperse of all the resources exactly where they need to go. And not feel a thing about it, not feel a single twitch of anger or resentment if we are prohibited from doing that unfairly, unjustly, disrespectfully. Or if we get to accomplish every single worldly profane task that we have in this fairness kind of way, we don't need to feel a single second of pride about it. Because everything that we're proud of, can be proud of, can be taken away from us, is in the control of others, is in the physical realm, where pain and hurt and damage very much are real things, right? Anything we are proud about, we can be prevented from accomplishing or sustaining and maintaining. That's why to live a life according to and dominated by emotion is so perilous. Because everything that gives us ecstasy can give us sadness. Everything that gives us pride can give us anger, resentment, bitterness, frustration, fear. Right? So if you trust respect, if you love respect in the truest sense, then you just go be of that. Go align yourself with respect. But never ever think that in the earthly, worldly, profane world, you ever have to defend that which is eternal and cannot be touched. Right? But also in the earthly, profane world, don't get yourself to feel resentment. And this is how, by understanding the nature of things. Right? So now you see, you didn't have to prove anything to anyone. You didn't have to judge anyone for anything, and you didn't have to go talk about it. You didn't have to prove to yourself, certainly, or show to yourself that you're a respectful person. You never had to identify with it in the first place. And in fact, that identity here on earth, in the profane world, so to speak, is what's keeping you from attaining peace fully within yourself in the realm of ideas. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes perfectly sense. I had a question though. Do you think the reason why I did not feel confident about my realization was because I did not give myself to the truth or respect? Completely. Surely.
Yeah, 100%. I think so. And that's okay. Because this experience showed you that you hadn't done that yet. But this experience also shows you that you are in full control of doing that, and that all that stands in between you and that is the false beliefs, the false identities, which are fully in your control to get rid of. Those false beliefs only exist because you didn't shine the light of reason on them yet. But as soon as you do so, they will be taken away from you. And as soon as they are taken away from you, you will be freed of this compulsion to prove to yourself or others the validity of illusions. As soon as you see that they're illusions, you will not continue to defend them, to fight for them. Right? And so all you have to do is be aware during situations like this. And all you have to do is, if you feel within yourself that conflict, that contradiction, but you can't quite figure it out yet, there's nothing wrong with that. Give yourself time. Read certain things that at least promise to hold the answer or to help you out with that. I'm a big proponent, as you know, maybe of journaling, which is just nothing other than what we're doing here right now, to speak, to discourse. But when you journal, you can do it with yourself. And you do have to do it first and foremost, I do believe, with yourself. Because yourself, as one of our friends, Stoic philosopher friends, Epictetus says, who better to convince you than you? And that's exactly what you're doing when you're journaling. You are convincing yourself. Or in other words, you're just working through something and you're seeing all the holes in your reasoning, in your beliefs. First, you need to see them. And then journaling also often allows you to work on them, to fix them, to patch them up. And then see, okay, I have formed a whole and a whole worldview that doesn't have any contradictions as far as I can see. And that satisfies me. It gives me clarity and it makes the world make sense to me. These are all your own standards, all your own ideas and works that can show you this and they can make you understand things. And that's yet another way of explaining what the work of life is. Right? And so that's all you have to do. Be with yourself, be aware, consume things that only will further you and not things that will distract you. People talk all day long about, I'm scrolling on my phone too much and I'm on my phone too much. Yeah, but why get off the phone? We need to find a reason for that. If we have nothing else to do, if we don't know where to look, what to do, then why not be on your phone? Because what else are you going to do? You have to find that reason within you. And you, of course, have that reason very clearly. You say, I want to stop judging. I want to stop resenting. I want to stop being angry. I want to stop being conflicted and contradicted and unhappy with myself, essentially. And so you have the very best reason to get off the phone, to stop talking to people who have really nothing to say, even if that is your own family or your own friends, and you have the right to not engage in these things, and you have the right to look within and to figure out whatever you think might need figuring out. You have the full right, just like those people have the right to be wrong, you have the right to be right. And no one can tell you otherwise. And no one can judge you. As you can see, judgment doesn't bring anyone anywhere. It doesn't get anyone anywhere. It only harms oneself. And so whenever someone judges you for taking the time to figure out the things that you know you need to figure out, wish them well. Know that they only think what they think is that they only do what they think is best, that they're also just defending their own illusions. and that they're fighting for what they think is right. But you don't have to be impacted by that. You don't have to go talk to anyone and prove anything to them or to yourself. You can do whatever you want. And like I said, most importantly, just give yourself time. Okay?
Yeah. Yes. Can I ask one last question?
Yeah.
Okay, so whenever someone asks, who are you? Like you asked in the last podcast, the person was saying that they insulted me, and you asked, who is that person? Is it okay to answer this question as, I can be whoever I want to be? Is it the right way for that?
Yeah, of course. The most important thing is that it satisfies you. If that answer satisfies you, then that's fine. But again, don't even ask anyone if that's okay, because it needs to satisfy you. Be your own judge, right? I could tell you yes or no. That still doesn't mean anything. But technically speaking, it is also not quite the final answer, is it? I mean, you can be, to say that you can be whoever you want to be is 100% true. But again, you have to decide if that is a satisfactory answer to the question of who are you. But yeah, of course, you can, just like God in the Bible, right? God in the Bible says, when Moses asks him, but what should I say is your name when they ask? Who should I say you are when they ask? And God just says, I am what I am. And I will be what I will be. And so, yeah, if you know within yourself who you are, you can answer that in all kinds of ways that you want. And you can just be, yeah, I am that I am. But think about it for yourself. And again, like I always say, it needs to satisfy you, right? And you can work on it as long as you want. And you will get there. It's not a question of if. It's a question of when. You will get there. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Thank you so much for encouraging to speak. I almost decided not to speak. But I joined this meeting and I was like, I don't want to.
Now tell everyone if that is the case. I'm not telling you what to say, but you were in fear. You almost didn't do it. You didn't want to do it. How glad are you now that you did it?
I have no words, actually. I am so glad that I did it. I think it's the best thing that I did this week, I think.
And I hope everyone who did not take the decision to speak anyway, even though they were afraid, even though they didn't want to, hears this and thinks about it. I promise you this is the one thing I am certain of in my entire life. Whatever fear tells you, it's a lie. It's a lie. And when you do the exact opposite of what fear tells you, just like you just said, you will be glad beyond words. Every single time, right? And again, I'm not talking about physical fears. I'm not saying go to the edge of a cliff and then do the opposite of fear says. I'm not saying that. We're talking about the spiritual, the intellectual, the realm of ideas, which everything else comes from. So thank you very much. And I will move you back to the audience, okay?
Thank you.
And
thank you so
much. We are very grateful to you that you came here and spoke, because you said beautiful things. You shared very important things, and you already... I hope you listen back to this when the recording comes out, of the things that you yourself said, and realize how much you said, all the insights that were already in there. Seriously, we could have had 5 separate conversations just on the things that you already know. Of course, we focused on the things that you're conflicted about and wanted to talk about, but we could have talked about five other things that you already know that are so, so valuable and so important, and that most of us lack for most of our lives. And I will immediately take our next speaker here. I've sent the invite.
I'm sorry. I just had to rush back. I was cooking food while you were gone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Take your time. We can also come back to you.
You're so good. I've got my scrambled eggs. It's okay.
All right.
How are you, though?
Good. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'll turn my camera on if it's working.
Yeah, sure.
There you go. So,
perfect.
Give me a second.
Catch your breath.
My question was about greed, because right now I'm working quite hard. Like, I don't talk to my friends very often because I'm working quite hard to change my, you know, like, circumstances, like financially, just my whole entire environment. But I'm worried that I won't be able to tell if I have enough, because right now I don't have it at all. But I'm worried that when I do, I will still have that feeling that it's not enough for me. Because if you look at all, like, the millionaires and all of the powerful people, they have so much greed, even though they have everything. And I'm just worried that I might get into that circumstance. And I was just kind of ask your view about it, because philosophers know quite a lot about greed. I just want to know, how will I be able to tell that something is enough for me? And I'm worried about having greed myself once I do have what I've accumulated from hard work and, like, the work of life.
Well, thank you for that question. I think it's important, even though it's more of a, I guess, caused more by logistical issues, first of all, right? But there are all kinds of ways, of course, to also then be misled, misguided in the so-called virtues. And as you said, greed is certainly not a condition that we want to be in, right? I think it's important to realize also that in the situation that you're now in, that you don't necessarily not have enough. I mean, the thinking already starts now, right? Because for you to sustain your life, truly, if you think about it, I always come back to this, which is sort of interesting. You know, in every country there are homeless people, right? But you hardly ever, if ever, especially not in the United States, hear of a homeless person dying of hunger. It's the most amazing thing if you think about it, right? Even so-called homeless people do not die of hunger. And so you are far from becoming a homeless person who is going to die from hunger, meaning no shelter, no food, no resources whatsoever, okay? So you're already, if you think about it, you are already now needing to deal with the danger of greed. We always have to. There is no, I think it's again an idea of the ego that's trying to trick us, which is trying to say, well, once you have a certain amount of resources, like there's a threshold, that's when there's a danger for greed. But I think the danger for greed is there always.
Can I pause you right there, though?
Yeah.
The thing is, it's like what Viktor Frankl said. It's like work of life. Life asks you what you make of it. And I want to make something of my life. The thing is, I don't know when I will say that is my life and this is who I am now and this is what I'm fine with.
The way you make something of yourself is never with physical resources. That's what sort of Viktor Frankl is trying to show you. Not directly. He's really directly talking about other things. But when he observes people, as you know, having read the book, giving their last piece of bread or their coat or their shoes to other people in the camp, that is the very moment that they're making something of themselves. In fact, they already have. That's just one of the things that he observes that shows him that they are already these people. What is a more valuable, more impressive, more amazing, however those, whatever profane terms you want to use for these kinds of people, a more accomplished person than someone who can go into an internment camp in World War II as a Jewish person and have a smile on their face. Not because they're lost their mind, not because they're crazy, but with full awareness and attention because they know what is truly important in this life. And they see the other person, not because of what they have or who they are, literally as their captors did, based on their race or their social status or whatever, but as another awareness, as another being. And to see a being suffering and to think nothing of it, to give them your last piece of bread, not as a sacrifice, not expecting something in return, not expecting praise, not expecting people around you to see that you did give them your last piece of bread or your coat when it's cold, but just to do it. That's how much they believed in the idea of justice. That's how much they gave themselves over to love, which is not an emotion, as we keep talking about, not a feeling, but a state of being. And that state of being is peace. Imagine being so at peace that you can do that. Imagine being so confident in your adherence to truth and justice and what is right, to think nothing of yourself and to just give whatever you can give, whatever you feel like giving out of love. Again, not any kind of expectation or anything in return. Wouldn't you say that this is a more accomplished person than any person in terms of resources has ever been able to accomplish?
I think that's very true.
So see, and
I think
and
we live in a society where people forget about that a lot. Sorry to interrupt you, but it just seems like that's not how society works nowadays. And it's very sad that a lot of society just works around greed.
That's an opinion, right? And
you
might
so?
Be, yeah. I mean, like I was just going to say, you might be right in that. You might be right. I don't know. But it is an opinion. And as you know, your opinions, your beliefs, your thoughts in general, color your life. So if you see the society and the world as greedy, even if you're right, you will tinge your life with that bitterness and that resentment. And it is my personal opinion that society, the world, is not necessarily consumed by greed. Because people don't know any better, right? We are all taught that we need to achieve certain material things in order to make something of yourself, in air quotes. And we all have the opportunity to realize that that's not how you make something of yourself. And that there's nothing wrong with money, by the way. There's nothing wrong with accumulating all that. Whatever you wish, house, car, as much money as it, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it inherently either. But to expect your salvation, to expect your completion, to expect peace, happiness, and to simply be comfortable with yourself from those things, that is objectively wrong. And that will objectively mislead you, as it has already billions of people. But I wouldn't say that there's this aware, evil machinery at work in society that just tears people apart with greed and hatred and anger. It's more of an ignorance. It's more of an unknowing. You are right. Most people are greedy, and you are right. Most people are resentful and bitter and depressed and envious and all that. But it's more of an ignorance. Everyone is suffering. Everyone is struggling with that. They're not doing that out of a sense of thrill or just joy of seeing others suffer. But if you say that, you know, the world is greedy and society is greedy, and use that for any kind of reason to play along with that, then you're going to harm yourself, right? And you're right in anticipating that danger of it never being enough. You're right. With this mindset, it is likely that we would always think that we don't have enough. But as you can see from reading Viktor Frankl and really any of the books that we like around here, it always shows you there's nothing, neither good or bad, about money. If you use it right, it's good. If you misuse it, it's wrong. But the knowledge of how to use it wrong and the knowledge of what misuse is comes from the realm of ideas. It's within you. It has nothing to do with materials. And that's why you can stick these formally very rich, very accomplished, or very societally not so high status people into an internment camp all together, and their true colors will show. And the person who maybe had everything on the outside, family, house, money, huge reputation, is sitting in the corner crying, kicking others, secretly stealing resources, their bread. It's documented that many Jewish people in there, just to gain some status, to gain some extra privileges, actually worked together with their captors, with the guards there, to tell what others did and to be an informant and whatever they could to get extra food, extra resources, even money. All that shows. Do you see that? Mm-hmm. And yet, as a contrast, like we already talked about, then there are those people for whom it's not even an option to take anything from anyone else that doesn't belong to them, who don't even think about it. Now, how did they develop that understanding? How did they cultivate that love? And how, most importantly, did they come into that state of peace? They didn't do it with money, right? There's the physical reality. You're going to clothe yourself. You're going to take care of yourself. And like I said, you can even make a lot of money if you want to and if you have the ability to. It will neither damage you nor will it improve you, though. That's why I always say there is the work of bread, of resources, of money, of bills being paid, and then there is the work of life. And we should do the work of bread to support the work of life, and not the other way around. If you have enough time to think, if you have enough time to read the things that you're pursuing, that you're exploring, and to maybe, like I say, journal about them, write about them, discuss them with people, then you have more than enough to do the work of life. And if you wish, you don't need to increase the work of bread. But if you do, you can do that. I mean, it's all up to you. I just want to show you the primacy and the importance of your inner self, your inner work, figuring out who you are by figuring out who you are not. We always say, you are not your ambitions. That doesn't mean anything to who you truly are. You are not your goals. And you are also not what happened to you in the past. And you are not other people's expectations on you. You are not your own expectations either. And you are not your failures. You are not your successes, so-called. You aren't any of that. And if that these words bring up any kind of fear within one of saying, wow, who am I then? I don't really know who I am. And that's scary. Then that's both an indicator that there's work to be done, as well as the very process of becoming free. Because when you realize that you're none of these things and you start asking yourself, well, what am I then? Or what else am I not, by the way? Each time you let go of something that you are not, you become freer. You literally become lighter. And that's why I say identities, thinking that you are your career, thinking that you are your resources, or thinking that you are your reputation, those are rocks in our pockets, because they are things that weigh us down that are external to us. So it's literally like a rock in your pocket. It weighs you down, but it's not really a part of your body. And so to go into your pockets and to start one by one taking those things out, you will accomplish things that are beyond your wildest imaginations without getting permission from a single person, without getting help from a single person, without getting a single job offer, a promotion, or any kind of money or salary from a single person, you will accomplish things that are beyond your wildest imagination. And so if you have enough to do the work of life, you have more than enough. Again, it doesn't mean you cannot strive for more. You can say, I don't know, totally random example. You can say, I love animals, and my goal is to sort of establish a facility to help animals, right? Take in a lot of animals and to heal them and to find them new homes, whatever, let's say, right? And that requires resources. Of course it does. Perhaps it requires many millions. And so you can quietly and modestly and calmly do that work and see if you can manage it, see if you can accomplish it. But if you fail at it, you are not lesser. And if you accomplish it, you are not more. You're simply doing something that gives you joy, it gives you pleasure, it gives you peace. It improves something. But don't ever improve something else to improve yourself. It never works, right? And you cannot accumulate something to accumulate yourself, to find yourself, to make something of yourself, as people literally say. You cannot make resources. You cannot make money to make something of yourself. It's impossible. It's literally, it has nothing to do with each other. You can make money to accomplish something in the real world, but you cannot make money to make something of yourself. Money is always a supporting thing. It's a tool, and it can be a very useful tool. And like I said, it is just as wrong to resent money, to shun money, as it is to desire and chase money. It's just as wrong, because either way, you're avoiding or chasing something that's not really in your control. Either one of that is wrong. As Epictetus says, he says something like, I'm not going to elbow and fight other people if figs are being given out. But if one falls in my lap, I'll eat it. Right? It's like that. So don't ever confuse the you and the not you, the self and the false self. You are not your resources. You are not your body. You are not your friends. You are not your reputation. You are not your past. You are not your future. You're none of those things. All that you are is the very thing that's listening to me right now. And all that I am is the very thing that's speaking. And you are listening, and I am speaking with attention, with awareness. Without your attention, which is what you truly are, your awareness, you could neither make money, nor listen, nor live, nor read, nor talk to anyone, nor do anything whatsoever. Right? And there are so many illusions in the world that scare our attention, that confine our attention, that mislead our attention, misguide our attention. And we hurt others, and we hurt ourselves, and we're confused, and we're bitter, and we're in pain, and we're suffering, we're struggling, we're challenged. And all of that's for no reason. Underneath all of those conditions, all of that strife, all of that envy, all of that struggling is the ground of truth, which is peace. Under all of that is a rock solid peace. And it was always there. It was always there. It was just identities that we got caught up in that took our attention, once again, attention, off of it, made it look like it's not there, made it look like the world is screaming and greedy and in pain and in anger. Whether that's true or not, it's at the same time in many ways also an illusion. It's funny, something can be true and an illusion, because something can be true and you can still be misguided by it. That's so amazing. But every time you remind yourself, I am nothing other than this awareness that is seeing. I am nothing other than this awareness. If you are in a state of worrying right now, I am that which worries, not the worry itself. Or I am that which is at peace, not peace itself. whether I lose peace or I have it, it doesn't do anything to peace. Peace was always there and it always will be there. And it always has been there. Does that make some sense?
No, that is so true. So what would you fully, sorry to interrupt, do you have something to say? Because I was going to have like a follow-up question. So what do you consider the work of life then?
Oh, you know, we have been talking about it already. For example, just pulling from the latest thing I said, to realize that beneath everything that has ever happened and beneath all of our beliefs and everything that we ever thought was true or false, there is rock solid peace. To realize that it is there, that it always has been there and always will be there, for example, is the work of life. To take the rocks out of your pocket is the work of life. To realize who you are not so that you know who you are is the work of life. As the ancient Greeks say, know thyself. They're not saying anything other than that. They're not saying anything other than take the rocks out of your pockets. Let go of illusion. Let go of identity, which is the same thing. Let go of fear, which is an illusion. Stop being so emotional. Don't be led by emotion, be led by reason, is what they say, right? For example, especially the Stoics say the nature of a human is to be reasonable, to be of reason. Humans are of reason. All of those things and many more things I keep saying during these meetings sometimes, I say, this is yet another way to say what the work of life is. It's endless, right? And most importantly, you will define it for yourself. Don't take any of these things as being the definition or one of the definitions. You come up with your own. I also always say you need to find a personal connection to these ideas. Me saying fear is an illusion, that peace is the ultimate goal, and that we shouldn't be led by emotion, but if we're led by reason, we can get there, means nothing. It can be the truest thing. It means nothing to you if it doesn't yet mean anything to you. You need to find your personal connection to everything you do. And this is not just about virtue and vice and all these things. Even in however you're trying to accomplish accumulating more resources, even within that, you need to find your personal reason to do it, your personal connection to do it. Otherwise, it will just be toil to you and you will resent the very work itself. But when you do it for something that is personally meaningful to you, meaningful, just like Viktor Frankl talks about, right? The meaning of life is to give life meaning, Viktor Frankl says. Now, that again is just to say the same thing as what I just said. To find a personal connection to things is the same thing as saying the meaning of life is to give life meaning. It's the same exact thing, but it's my way of saying it. So you come, you do whatever you need to do to come to your own ways of saying it and thinking about the same one truth that we're all talking about. And your ways of saying it and thinking about it might exactly be the way I say it, or the way Viktor Frankl thinks about it, or some other person. It might be exactly that, but it could also be totally different, or it could be a mix and match, whatever it is. Also, as I think it was Seneca who said it, but again, it doesn't matter, especially after the quote I'm about to mention. He said, everything that is said well is common property. Meaning we're so obsessed nowadays with the idea of originality, right? As soon as someone says something or does something, it cannot be repeated. Otherwise, it's like plagiarism. And in school, it literally is plagiarism. It's the most messed up thing we're doing in academia right now, in my opinion, to call everything plagiarism. Because universal and timeless ideas are not going to change. They are always there. How can we be barred from speaking about them just because Socrates already did, or because Jesus already did, right? It's the silliest thing ever. So what I'm just trying to say is, the entire world is your playground. All ideas that have ever been discovered have been discovered for you, and not to be an original person or whatever to gain reputation. No, that's been done for you. Epictetus worked for you without even knowing you. Socrates worked for you without even knowing you. Socrates died for you without even knowing you. Okay? And so the work of bread is to support the work of life, not the other way around. So give yourself to truth. Yeah? And I also always say, I guess this is another way of saying what the work of life is. If you dedicate yourself to your own exploration of timeless and universal ideas, you will find your own unique answer to every question you ever had and ever could have. If you dedicate yourself to your own personal exploration of timeless and universal ideas. If you don't, how can you expect anything? Right? It's like not studying for a test and then expecting anything to happen during that test. Nothing is going to happen. But if you do it, no one can prevent you from achieving peace, and no one can prevent you from being 100% fortified against greed. If greed is right now what you're exploring, what you're thinking about, what you're dealing with within yourself, then go commit yourself to that exploration. That's exactly what I'm saying. Read all the books that hold the promise of telling you something about that. Talk to all the people, just like you're doing right now. You're already, as we speak, engaged in the work of life, right? And so if you keep doing that, I promise you this, you will be completely safe from greed and any other thing you ever worried about, and you will have every single thing, most importantly, peace. Okay? Anything else that you want to talk about?
I'll let other people have a go. But one last question is that I've looked at your website and I've read all of the books. I was wondering if you have any new book recommendations that you could give to us.
You read all of the books?
My favorite one is Einstein's, to be honest. I really like it.
That's amazing that you read so many of those.
I really, like you said, I have a lot of time to do the work of life, and I really like listening to the books, like audiobooks as well as the actual books. I struggle with the Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. I'm trying to read it at the moment, but the language is so difficult to understand and fully incorporate. Me personally, I've got like a bad translation, and then I went on YouTube and went on an audiobook, and I still find that difficult. And I know that you said to look up the Penguin translation, but normally the books that I'm reading are free. And so if the Penguin translation is probably the best, I might have to spend money on that. But yeah.
But you know what? It's pretty cheap, especially if you go to eBay, you can get a paperback, used, whatever. I mean, $1 or $2, I see them, you know.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. Penguin, the paperbacks of Penguin are extremely cheap, even when they're new. They're like $7, $8, $10, I don't know. And then used, of course, they hardly go for anything. So you can always, if you're smart, you know, start learning eBay. And you can get books that are like, they look brand new. Technically, they're used. I do it all the time, right? So you can really do it. And you're right, though. Translations, getting the right translation is very important. That's why I always say. Do you like sort of what people would consider heavy philosophical reading?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Like my favorite ones. I read all of the Letters as well. I don't remember who exactly it was, but I like it. But the problem is it's so dated that it's hard to try and incorporate it into real life. That's why sometimes the modern ones are a lot easier to just listen to and then go about your day applying the knowledge. The actual philosophical ones, you have to kind of sit down and actually meditate on them and really think hard about what it exactly applies to and how it can apply to yourself as well.
Yeah, and that would be my number one suggestion, that you don't really do it as a side thing. I'm not saying that you do, but especially with Marcus Aurelius and the Letters and things like that, I really would suggest not reading more than a page or two of Marcus Aurelius, even less, maybe half a page, and really just think about what he's saying, because he's not writing a novel, right? It's not a story of someone going to the beach and meetings and all that. It's like every word is huge, and it's saying something. And I still to this day, and I think this will always happen, whenever I read the meditations, I read something that I feel like I have never read before. You know? It's just so amazing. And so it will keep unfolding as you are unfolding yourself. You will always see something new in it. So to me, when you listen to a book in audio form, there's someone who reads it to you. And so you're not going at your own speed. And so they might essentially brush over something that you're not seeing. So I would recommend that you read a little bit at a time and really with greater focus. There are some books that I want to add to the reading recommendations. But we'll have to see. I'm trying to be very careful because I don't want to put too much on there. I'm trying to put like really life-changing things on there, right? But we'll see. We'll see. But there, Epictetus is another one. That's someone that you can read 30 times. I mean, as soon as it's the same with meditations with Epictetus, with a couple more maybe, as soon as I finish the book, I just turn it right over and read again. Because it's layers and layers and layers, and it's reminders at the very least, even if you remember what you read. It's reminding you of something that needs to be a daily practice and a way of life. And so there's infinite value in those books, and they are cheap. And in fact, most of them are even free. So you can really build yourself a nice library like that that you can go back to daily. Okay?
Okay. Thank you. So no new book recommendations.
Yeah, I'll add them as soon as I can. And thank you for being here. That was really nice, and I think important to talk about. And you're absolutely right. These are things that we all need to figure out, that we all struggle with. And so I'll put you back to the audience right now. And again, thank you very much. And you know, we need to, like I said, we need to find our own connection to the work of life, our own personal way of doing it. And that's what I worry about sometimes a little bit, is that I don't want to put dogma back in your life, right? We keep talking about letting go of identities, finding your own personal connection. And so I don't want to make it look like the things I say are the way that they are. I am just sharing with you the personal connections and the thoughts that I myself came to and that makes sense to me, and that I can adhere to without anyone else adhering to them. I don't need anyone else's approval. I've gotten myself to a point on many of these issues that we are talking about. Other people can tell me whatever they want. We can have a discussion and it might be very interesting, but I don't need anyone to approve of anything that I believe. And I don't need to prove it to others either. But since you are sometimes interested in, I mean, literally the questions are, what do you think about this? I don't want you to be guided by what I think. These are just suggestions. I just want to suggest them to you so that you can do your own work of life and see, does that make sense to me? No, you know what? Actually, it doesn't make sense to me. Although there's a little part to it that I find valuable. So I'll take that from it and I'll build my own, you know, with 12 other sources, including what I myself come up with that I never heard anywhere else before. I'll build my own worldview. That's the point. So I want you to be mindful of that as well. So for now, I will invite our next speaker.
Hi guys. Thanks for having me on, and good to be here.
Thank you for being here.
Yes, of course. So I was hoping we could talk a bit about the question of the week, and yes. I don't really have any specific question in mind at the moment. I just thought I would just share my like reflection on the question itself, and then maybe we get to some like question.
Yeah.
So I actually I thought about this like idea of like judging actually a while back, and it was inspired by one of your videos that you made, and it was about, you spoke about this idea that there is no like good and evil, and I think it's something that one of our philosopher's friends said. And so in the video, he spoke about this idea, and I found it very like thought-provoking. And so it got me reflecting on like the idea of judgment and the way that we as humans like judge things. And so I asked myself, like, how do I go about like, you know, judging things? And so when I think of judgment, then it's because it's like it's discerning between good and evil, right? And so I ask myself, like, how do I decide something's good or bad? And so this idea that there is actually no good or bad, that's like interesting, because the idea of, or the act of judging implies that there is something that's good and bad, right? And so as I thought about this, the conclusion I kind of came to was that as humans, our judgment is guided by the will that we have for our life, right? So if we have an idea of something that we think of what we want in life, then anything that opposes that like idea or reality, we judge as bad, right? And so ever since like reflecting on that idea, it's I like practically in my life, I think I've gotten a lot more like I guess like critical of myself whenever I find myself like judging something, because I'm also always asking myself like why, like what is my will, and what is it really, is my will really that like virtuous that it's like justified for me to say that this is like a good or bad thing. And it also kind of reminded me of the first few pages of the Bible where it speaks about like the fall of man, where Adam and Eve ate from the fruit of like the knowledge of good and evil. And so like thinking about it, like, is this maybe like kind of that curse of having the ability to judge between good and evil? Like it's kind of a curse at the end of the day, right? Because when you, it's like kind of a, as humans, we are very like, you know, limited in our perspective on reality. Like the universe or God is omnipotent, right? Like the universe can't be ignorant about anything. But as humans, it feels like we are very ignorant. And so it becomes hard to really truly judge something if you have such limited perspective. So yeah, that's kind of just like the conclusion I came to. But I'm just curious to like hear your thoughts on like that take and the way that I think about like judgment, like the way that we let that our will like determines how we judge things, and like is there actually like an absolute truth about what is good and evil? Because I tend to believe that there is, but only, you know, God or the universe knows that that truth.
Right. Yeah. First of all, thank you for sharing your insights there. You clearly thought about it, and you're sharing your work of life with us here so that we may benefit from it. And so that's very valuable to me. And I thank you for that. It's very, very important. And in terms of the things you said, again, the most valuable thing about anything you could say or believe is that it makes sense to you. But of course, in what you said, there's great overlap in what makes sense to me as well. And I think you're right that there is one truth and one reality. I believe in that as well. And that we don't have anything close to a perfect or complete insight into it, of course. And I do believe that, however, the potential and the ability that we do have to have insight into it, because some insight into it is given to us, not in actuality, but in potentiality, right? Because there are people who make use of that potential and many who don't. I just find that the closer and the more we align ourselves to what that truth is, at least the parts of it that we can see, the more at peace we become. And that's underlying all of my, personally to me, my work of life. It's not for others. I don't do it to be selfless. I always say that. This is the work of life. Me working on myself has been the most selfish thing I've ever done in my entire life, and that's the most selfish thing I could ever conceive of. And I think I made a whole video about that where I said, true selflessness is true selfishness. Because there is nothing that benefits others more than you working on yourself for yourself, not for others. Because whenever we do something for others, we want to see a result in the world. And essentially what we're saying is we want to get something in return. We want to have an impact on the world. All those people who say, I want to leave the world a better place than what I found it. That sounds good. And sure, there's nothing wrong with that. But to just do something, anything, just to make the world a better place than what you found it, to me is a 100% ego thing to do. It's almost being resentful that the world has anything good about it at all. I wish this was even worse so that I could be the one fixing it. Or we're jealous at people who get to fix something and we say, I wish I had seen that problem, or I wish that problem would occur again so that I can fix it. It's almost like a firefighter in a town where there are never any fires, and they sort of start to wish that there would be a fire just so that they could go and put it out. And to me, that thinking is a little bit like that. So, but when you do something for selfish purposes, when you say, I want to better myself, or I want to get closer to truth because I want to be at peace. I don't want to be resentful. I don't want to be angry, not because I don't want other people to feel bad that I'm angry at them, but because anger disturbs peace. And fear disturbs peace. And so the closer we align ourselves to that one truth, the more we're at peace.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, and when you think about it in that way, then it's like humbling, you know, to humble yourself and to like kind of admit that, like, I don't know what the actual truth is. And to just like kind of accept that, right?
Yep. That's exactly it. Submission. Acceptance is part of that fundamental one truth that all religions, all true religions, all true philosophies have realized. When you accept, when you submit to the will of reality, and you can call reality God, you can call it the universe, whatever you want to call it, but things come about in a certain way. They do. And you have the option to accept it or to deny it. Denying, of course, not really being an option, because it's going to happen anyway, and you're just going to suffer by being in denial, literally. And so to switch that attitude from arguing with reality, from trying to fight with things as they come about, and to think that you could even possibly do that, to free yourself from that attitude into an attitude of acceptance, to say, the world is not any one way. Just like we talked to the previous speaker when she said the world's greedy. Whether that's true or not, when we believe that the world is greedy, that does something to us. And what it does is not peace, it's not contentment, it's resentment, it's frustration, it's regret. And it's, in a way, it's denial. Like, as in denying things, not wanting them to happen the way they happen. We don't want society to be greedy, right? And so that's why I always encourage us to think about everything that we perceive to be the truth to be our perception of truth and not necessarily truth itself. And to always ask, what if I'm wrong? And it's the foundation of my entire belief system, if you want to call it that, to find ways of thinking that work regardless of what the truth is. In other words, whether society is greedy or not, I can have a mode of acting that works in both situations. See? If I practice acceptance and I work on myself and I focus on myself and I don't focus on others, then it doesn't matter to me what they're doing. And if I can figure out beliefs and so-called truths and ways of operating in this world that are valid and work for me, regardless of what others are doing and thinking and believing, then to me, that's being aligned with truth. Because truth works in all situations. There's no situation that truth does not work in or is not valid in. And so my entire system, if you want to call it that, my entire way of going about doing the work of life is to find all of those truths, all those ideas that are valid regardless of everything else, regardless of what truth really is. I cannot go wrong with love. I know that. I cannot go wrong with honesty. I cannot go wrong with acceptance, with submission. If I make reality's will my will, I cannot go wrong. I cannot go wrong because I'm with reality.
Yeah.
Right? And so judgment is the same way. As soon as you judge, you are denying reality. As soon as you judge, you are arguing with how things come about. Because you're saying, when you judge, this person is doing that wrong. This situation is a mistake. This act is a waste. Whenever you judge like that, you're necessarily saying you know better. You know better than that person. You know better than this event. You know better than God. You know better than truth. Because if you couldn't see what's wrong with the situation, you wouldn't know that it's that you know is better. But if you give up that idea that you know better, if you give up that idea that you are more competent than reality itself, the way that things come about and the way things actually occur in life, if you get rid of that, you will be right no matter what. Because you've made your will overlap with the will of reality, with the way that things actually come about. Not the way you expect them to come about. Realize that every time we judge someone, it's because they failed to live up or they did live up to our expectation. That's when we say, you did a right thing. You did a wrong thing. It's because we have expectations. And to have expectation is another form of knowing better. Because if you didn't know better, you wouldn't have an expectation. You would just wait and see. Why expect? Just wait and see. Reality will tell you. Truth will tell you. And so that's why expectations are useless and harmful. Narratives are harmful. To say, all my life I have been neglected, I have been overlooked, I have been abused, I have always been helped, I'm on the right side of things, I am always been guided by a divine light that is taking care of everything. All of these things are narratives. Again, a narrative can be true. There are true stories and fictional stories. But nevertheless, the narrative itself, the fact that it is a narrative, does not serve us. So if we let go of expectations, if we let go of narratives, if we let go of knowing better, and if we start accepting and submitting, we will stop judging, we will stop knowing better, and we will stop being wrong. Because if we just accept everything the way it comes about and says, yep, the way it just happened is the way it should be, because that's how it just happened. If you have that attitude, you literally cannot go wrong. And so that's why it's so important to align oneself with truth. And that's why it's so important to let go of expectations. And that's why it's so important to not judge, because judgment comes from expectation. And that's why it's so important to not think about oneself. Because as soon as you think about yourself, you assign, again, an expectation towards yourself. We assign roles to other people and to ourselves. Say, I need to be this kind of person. And then again, the narrative comes in, the expectations come in. And when those are disappointed, the judgment comes in and resentment comes in and anger and frustration and all those things stand between us and peace. And so what if we just let go of all of that? Which life tells us to do anyway. And so I guess what you predicted happened, you just shared your insights and it just led to just us talking a bunch of different things. But yeah, that's what I generally was thinking about when you were talking and saying those things.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think also, like, ever since I've watched that video and like had this reflection, like practically in my life, I feel like it's like a lot more freeing, you know, not to like put this obligation on yourself of like feeling you need to, you know, constantly judge things and like, you know, think that something's bad and something's good, you know. So like practically in my life, it feels a lot freeing and like easier. Life becomes easier. But yeah, so yeah, all good. I think we can let someone else speak maybe if there's time. But I also just want to thank you, Atesh, for like the videos you make on your YouTube channel. It's always very thought-provoking for me, and I always enjoy like listening to the ideas and so on. So yeah, thank you.
I appreciate it. No, and take your time. This is what it's for. It doesn't matter how many people there are who want to speak, in terms of that if you don't get to say what you want to say, or if you don't follow a thought to where it naturally leads, then the whole thing defeats its own purpose, right? That's why, although I would love to get to everyone in every meeting, the most important thing is that we conclude something, right? And however long that takes is the proper time for it. And this is just an example to what we were just talking about. Instead of having an expectation, it's like, oh, if I give everyone 20 minutes, we can do, that's an expectation. That's me saying it will take 20 minutes. Maybe it'll take 3 hours. Maybe it'll take 3 minutes. Who knows? I don't know. See, that's another way of letting go of expectations. But I appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing these things. And I will put you back to the audience for now with, again, deep gratitude of what you shared. And thank you for speaking here. I hope you do it again sometimes, but not as an expectation. It's just something that comes up in me and I won't be disappointed. And yeah, as we were just saying, there are a few more requests, but I am over time again. And as always, please, all those people who still have their requests in to speak, please just put them in. First thing next time, you always have the opportunity. There's never a rush in the beginning, right? People add them later on, but there's never a rush in the beginning. So if you're quick, you can be the very first one if you want to. And I encourage you to do that. I can't change the order and I don't remember who was there from last time. So I can't do that myself. So if we self-regulate in this way, that would be perfect. If all those people who would like to speak now, put their request in first next time, then that will be the perfect system. And I still owe you a new question of the week. That's why I am saying maybe we should talk to the people who still have their request in next time, so that we have some time for the new question of the week, which is always so insightful, right? Which shows us so many things. So first of all, I want to thank everyone who has not only spoken about the current question of the week about judging, but everyone who participated in it even without saying anything. Because that's the most important thing, is that you actually apply it in your life. I don't mind it if you never told me about it or anyone else about it. But as long as you apply it, that's the most valuable thing. And so I want to thank everyone who applied it, who thought about it. And by the way, just because it's not the question of the week anymore, it doesn't mean you can't keep thinking about it. Every question of the week could go on for a lifetime. I do believe that. And that's how valuable they are. And so, as you know, we have a whole channel for the question of the week. You can always go back, look what other questions of the week were, if you're late to it, if you didn't have a chance to do it, or if you just want to continue doing it. So I encourage you to do that. All these tools are here for you, not only in this Discord, not only accepting the universe and all that, but in the world. All these tools are there for you. That's what I want you to see. And so thank you for everyone who's given their responses, especially to those people, because it takes a lot of openness, a lot of honesty, a lot of kindness, and a lot of generosity to come here, especially to overcome sometimes the shyness of talking in front of people, and to share those things anyway, and to not listen to fear. It's the most amazing, courageous, and valuable thing you can do for yourself. Again, the best reason to do something are selfish reasons. So the next question of the week, now the new question of the week, is very simple. It's this. What's more important? Intention or outcome? What's more important? Intention or outcome? So think about that for a little bit, and you can take it any way you'd like. If you want more clarity on the question, don't get more clarity. Just go with what you think it is. But generally, we know what I think it means. You know, is the intention you have more important, or what ends up happening, right? Because we cannot always achieve what our intention is. And sometimes it turns out that it's good that we didn't achieve our intention, right? Because we didn't know any better. We didn't have all the information. But so think about that in your life generally, when you observe situations. Do you lay more importance on the intention that a person had or that you had, or the outcome? What's more important to you? Someone said, makes me think of the end justifies the means. Yeah. There you go. That's someone who cares about outcomes more than intentions. People who say that saying, for example. So that might be you, and then you can think about why is that, right? And we'll discuss it. And again, it will go into the question of the week channel. So you can discuss it there with text, chat all the time. You can respond to other people's responses. You can have beautiful discussions. That's what that channel is for, and I highly encourage you to make use of it. And even if no one's talking there, just for you to put your own words in there, as you know, writing and formulating words, sentences, formulates ideas also. And so that is valuable to you most of all. You don't do it for others. So that's the new question of the week. Thank you everyone for being here, for spending this large part of your Sunday. Some people are waking up at 10:30, 3 a.m. to be here. So highly, highly appreciate it. And of course, there's a recording. So thank you very much. And we will talk more next week. There's always next week. There's always a chat. You can always reach out to me personally, as you know. And I'm looking forward to next week, as well as being perfectly content with being in the here and now.